As Eric said, my name is Frank. I'm here together with Emily. But before we start, we are going to do the first move. And we are in a very large room, and I think we are almost with 400 or 500 people, but there's room for 800, I believe. So I suggest that we are going to move, and there are two rules in this move. Thank you, Emily. Two rules in this move. One, move to the person nearest to you. The second rule is you can only move forward, and forward is to us. So this is the algorithm with the two rules.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's a flaw in the algorithm.
That's it. Yeah, there's something wrong with the algorithm. So, thank you.
We got another guest here.
Thank you. So that's where we must acknowledge that things go wrong. So our starting point is in the projects we do, things are going wrong. If everything is okay, we stop asking questions, and asking questions is one of the most important part of our talk today, and also of ethics. So, let's go on
to the second move. First, we're going to do some profiling. Who are you? If everyone could stand up, that would be great. Oh, take care. You can also just use your hand if you want. So the first question is, are you a techie or not a techie? If you are a techie, stand. If not, take a seat. Half-techies, some half-techies.
If you are half-techie, you do a squat.
Nice. All right. Next question. Everyone can stand again. Who are you? Do you prefer techno music or disco music?
Okay.
Okay. Is there a relation between techies and techno music?
Yeah, there is a relation. Yeah. For disco music, you are welcome on the 80s party tonight in the 80s village.
Yeah. Next question. Everyone can stand again. Is this the first time you've heard ethics at a session in MCH? Then please stand, otherwise sit. Huh.
Okay.
Cool. Some people have heard it before. Okay. Stand again, please. Do you also keep losing all your stuff? Then stay standing. If you know exactly where everything is, take a seat. Wow, that's surprising. Must be something about the 80s village where everything just gets lost. And then for the final one, everyone stand up again. Do you know what data ethics is? Then please stay standing. If you think, I don't know what it is, then take a seat. Okay, we've cool. Got some people who already know what's up.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there was a little bit of profiling of you, but we know you very good at this moment. So that's also one of the most important things, not only asking questions, but also understand your audience. So that's what we did at this moment. And now we fully know your situation, your context, how you act, how you had this. That's just good. No. I understand. So we have to do some more research, but we only have 50 minutes. So we will do that afterwards or in another time. So
go ahead. Oh. Who are we, Frank?
Yeah, I already introduced us. That's Frank and Emily. Welcome. And special also, we are part of the 80s Village. Are there people from the 80s Village here? Yeah. Also our fans. And every night we have the 80s party, and that's at 8 o'clock. And to understand for the people who are Dutch in this... Oké, okay. Ja, nou welkom allemaal. De 80s party. 80s in for the one who is not Dutch. 80s is in Dutch is ethical. So 80s is ethical. So that's why we call it 80s party. We have all kind of activities, and one of them is every night the 80s party, where we have a nice disco, and also for you the makeup tutorial that you cannot that people cannot of cameras cannot recognize you on as face recognition. Sorry for my thing. So you're very welcome. Now we're going to the content.
All right. So, data ethics, what is it? Some of you, maybe most of you, said that you already have an idea of what it is. The first question is, what do you think responsible use of data looks like? Maybe think about it for yourself first, just a little bit. Are there certain words that come up in your mind? If you have one, feel free to shout it out.
Sound engineering, sound data engineering.
All right.
What did you say?
Sound data engineering.
Good data engineering. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Anyone, what do you think responsible use of data looks like? Anyone who wants to shout?
Getting data by informed consent first.
Getting data by informed consent first. Yes, thank you.
Data minimization.
Nice one. Yep.
That's a nice one. What?
Gold mining.
Gold mining. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Very good.
Purpose limitation.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sell everything on the dark web. Last but not least.
Good start. Involve the primary stakeholders. Hey.
Involve the primary stakeholders. Are you you are familiar with the ethical framework we're going to deal with? Okay. Good. Thank you. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
That are all stuff which is very important. So.
Good input, yeah. We've found a little definition from the Open Data Institute that we quite liked for data ethics. It's a branch of ethics that considers the impact of data practices on people, society, and the environment. So I'm sure a lot of things that you just shouted kind of fall within that definition as well. Now, question. Who uses tools specifically for data ethics in their work? And with tools, we mean instruments, codes of conduct, anything like that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's very good. Thank you. That's it's more than we had expected.
Yeah.
We do. Yeah.
Much more.
I didn't need her.
Yeah, I think maybe we have some time to hear what kind of instruments people use.
Yeah.
Is there somebody who'd like to share?
If somebody would like to share, please go to the microphone. Don't shout. Or if you shout very shortly, they will repeat that.
Yeah. Anyone can say what kind of instrument you use?
And I guess for a subset of data ethics, which is specific around people and the rights and freedoms and the protection, it would be data protection impact assessments that include the transparency principle and the involvement of the stakeholders. So basically, you have that stuff covered, but it's really just one bit.
Oh, I see.
Thank you.
Impact assessments. Mm.
I've got this framework, Frank.
You have a framework. Yeah, cool. Anyone else? Ladies, one, the last one. Okay, then we go on.
Of course, what you'd also have, frankly, is of course the draft of the AI Act of the European Union, because it will hit you anyhow. So
yeah.
The AI Act. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So technical tools like explainable AI and fairness metrics. So I'm a data scientist. I use those tools.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Willy. Okay, next one.
And actually, what's super powerful and should be used massively is that under GDPR, if you use legitimate interest, you are legally obliged to do a legitimate interest assessment. And that actually goes quite deeply into ethics. And that is mandatory for everybody who would rely on Article 6, whatever.
And which tool is that? The
GDPR.
Legitimate interest assessment, yeah. The LIA.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes. Very interesting. Good feedback.
Yeah, and these are a couple of instruments, and there are also all other instruments developed. For example, the ODI has developed the data ethics canvas. They also developed the data ethics maturity model. And these are just examples. You also have the Tech Pledge. People know the Tech Pledge. It's from Denmark. It's a community framework developed by a community in a big event in Copenhagen. So there are different ways to develop ethical frameworks. Also, for example, companies like UNICEF, who do a lot of in developing countries, so it's very important that they do that in a responsible way. They also have ethical guidelines, in this case for geospatial technologies, because that's very important in their work. So if you go search on Google, you find a lot of ethical frameworks. It's exploding. It's exploding. And also, we cannot stay behind. So we also, together with, in the Netherlands, with GeoNovum, someone knows GeoNovum? And the Ministry of Internal Affairs, Emily and I lead the development of an ethical framework. For the responsible use of location data, but it's also for all data because it are general principles and it leads to four main principles: the justified purpose, already said, and to be open and transparent, fair in inclusivity and quality, and solidarity and engagement. And Emily will give an explanation about these values.
Maybe a good thing to add at the moment is that our framework at this point is still in Dutch. We will probably translate it into English at some point soon. But these are the main principles that we got out of a lot of other frameworks as well. So,
yeah, and to add, it's developed with 12 organizations and 12 cases where we have learned, okay, what's important in your in your situation, in your context.
So. Yeah. So the first principle that we came up with is a justified purpose. It's actually was already mentioned by many of you just now, so that's very nice that that's also the first thing that we found. This is about data minimization, the purpose that the whole project is about, the context of the goal. So not only do you know what you're working towards, but do you understand where it's coming from? Have you been to the place that maybe is relevant if we're talking about geolocation data. The third question we think is a really interesting one. Do you even need data to reach this goal, or could you use other sources? Those are the main questions that fall under this principle. Is there something you would like to add?
What we always see is that the purpose, why are we doing this, is in every case we did research with, was the most important question, because a lot of the cases we studied was started as, okay, we're going to do something with data and we're going to do something with tech, and there was too less connection with the how do you call it? The opgave, the mission and the reason, and it was mainly for governmental organizations. So that there was really a disconnection between the tech data and the clients who have to solve important issues in the Netherlands.
Yeah. Question.
So if you've defined your goal, how do you work out what data you need to satisfy your goal? Because you say, what data do we need? How do you do that?
That's the first step. This, what we see is, okay, what data do we have, and which is in this domain, and then people can see what you want to do is to not knowing which data there is, but mostly reuse, that you are going to figure out what data you need before you go search for the data. And you have the first step you have to do is to understand the question. You have to understand what is needed here. So you have to understand the primary stakeholders. We come there later on. So it starts with understanding, and then you go look, okay, what data do we need here?
Do you need to have some sort of hypothesis to start off with that says, if this is what I'm trying to do, then this probably is the data I need? Presumably you have to understand something about the domain.
You have to really understand the domain. That's a must, that you understand it. Yeah.
How is proportionality included in the justified purpose?
I would say it's included in... I suppose it's included in the context of the goal. Is it clear? Is the data that you're using proportional to the goal that you're trying to achieve? Judging by the purpose that you have, is that justified? Is the context clear? It's also in the word justified, I think.
Yeah, that's a bit hard sometimes because you sometimes have companies that say, hey, we want to do this, so it's justified. But then it's not proportional.
Yeah.
So it would be really nice to have proportionality explicitly mentioned in the framework.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a nice point. Maybe we should add that these are just for... This is a very big summary of the framework that, that we have created. In the actual framework, we have four roles that we go into. We have the project leader, the client, the primary stakeholders, and the people who are actually doing the data science. And then we go into each one of these specific areas and look at what they should specifically look into. But yes, proportionality is very important, I agree. Then the next principle that we have is open and transparent. Probably not new to you. This is mainly looking at not only whether the data is open and transparent, but whether the whole life cycle is open and transparent, and is that something that you want? Also the adaptations to the data clear, so the metadata. Is the communication understandable, not only for people who speak the language of tech, but also the non-techies? And what about personal data? Obviously, there's a lot of legislation around personal data, but that should be a minimum bar. What else can you do to make sure that it's open and transparent?
Yeah. Questions about this one?
So sometimes you have openness conflicting with, for example, the personal data protection. And that is quite a hard balance to find sometimes, especially as combining data from different sources might cause data that on the first sight is not personally identifiable to become personally identifiable. So how do you find that balance?
That's a very good question, and it depends on the situation. And one of the most important thing is that you include also the people who are directly involved and affected by your decisions or by your information project, and to do that together. And of course, according also to the law.
I quite often see that companies name their customers the persons being involved, but not the data subjects.
Yeah, so, exactly.
It would be really nice if the data subjects are explicitly mentioned, because they are often forgotten.
Yeah, the data subject, that's are the primary stakeholders, and all the other ones are secondary. So you have to involve the primary stakeholders in this discussion. Yeah.
All right. The next principle is fair and inclusivity and quality. The difficult thing about ethics, I suppose, is that we use words like fairness and justified, and nobody really, you know, you have to see in each situation what that means. That's why the questions might also seem a little bit broad and vague. But in this case, we're looking at bias. Are we aware of our own bias? Are our sources and data diverse and inclusive? So that's not, are you only using data? Are you also using just expert knowledge and other kind of sources? Is the quality sufficient? You don't necessarily always have to have the best quality, but is it sufficient to reach the goal that you want? And the last question, can we trust the data? That, I suppose, is a feeling of, do you think that the data that you have is trustworthy enough to apply it in your project?
What we often see, and there's also this trend of data-driven activities, data-driven government, data-driven companies, is that when there is a question, they start with finding as much data as possible, and they go to the structured data sets which are available, often open data, but they forget to also to include again, the primary stakeholders, but also expertise from the organization, but also expertise from knowledge institutes, and they don't do that. And then you miss too much information to make a good information product.
Yeah. So this principle is not only about the data itself, but also about the people in the team who are involved in the process.
Any question?
Sorry, here I am again. So have you got any way to find out what your own bias is? Because are you aware of your own bias? Definitely not.
No.
So is there any tool to discover if you have a bias?
That's a really good question. Greg, you want to answer that?
Yeah, I don't have an answer, a complete answer, but one of the ways to do it is to differentiate between different types of bias. So, for example, if you've got an algorithm you're developing to recruit data scientists, for example, then you go out and you get your sample and you find out that 80% of data scientists are all men, okay? So if your sample has 80% men in it, then your sample isn't biased. Okay, that's the first thing to remember. But the domain, the population from which you've drawn it, which is data scientists, is biased in relation to the general population, where 50% of people are female. Yeah. So part of it is just identifying our human biases, so I agree, but some of it is having technical tools to actually define what these biases are and then being able to measure them.
Yeah, thank you. So there must be some of day of bias assessment, and that's also with the team you work, with the people you work, also the client, the project leader, they all have biases, and you have to address that and to take that in your breakdown structure as a project leader to discuss that, and also to publish that what you have done so that other people can control that.
And of course, the more diverse your team is, the more likely you are to pick up on each other's biases.
Yes, okay. I have a question about what you exactly mean with fair, because I know it has different meanings, but for me, in philosophy, when we say fairness, we refer to principles of fairness, and therefore we're referring to ethics of rights. And so when I read fair, I feel like, okay, this is not going any further than law.
Oh,
this is just basic ethics that's about rights and about law, some Hobbes, some Rousseau, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I feel like your framework goes further than law and tries to do something more. So I want to ask you how you see that. Is that on purpose or?
Yeah, that's really on purpose, because we always get back, okay, people say, okay, ethics, that's law. And we have, and ethics goes beyond the law. It goes further than that. And the law is mainly is high over, and then how you fill it in, you can use ethics. So ethics is going further, and every value we describe has also a paragraph which says, okay, what's the difference between this value and the law, and ethics and the law? So that's really a very important point. Some people say, okay, it's in the law, so why do we have to do it? It's not in the law.
And maybe to answer your first question, how do you define fairness? I think you'll notice we keep going back to this because Frank and I both think it's very important, but you do that as with your primary stakeholders, the people who you're doing the project for, the people who will be impacted by your data. They should be deciding what they feel is fair. And it's a conversation that you have to have together.
And it's very important, guided conversation.
Yeah.
And it's also very hard to explain what you are doing to the people. So that's also one of a very important principle, is the explanation of what you are doing and the discussing with those primary stakeholders.
But thanks, nice question.
So if you are in government, how do you involve your primary stakeholders? Because they're basically the whole population. Mostly.
Yeah, that's something. Every project has its specific. Every project is also unique. Every project has its specific primary stakeholders, and that's also related to the first one, to have a specific goal, a justified purpose. And when you make it small, this purpose, if you have a large, very large purpose, then it's very hard to identify the stakeholders. So you have to make also your purpose smart, then you can define your stakeholders very good. And then involve them in your project on several ways.
Yeah, but if I'm making a project for collecting data for government purposes, for example, and I collect data of people in the Netherlands, it would be very hard to talk directly to stakeholders because they will think, well...
Yeah, but if you make a data set for a governmental organization, then it's probably a high abstracted or whatever data set. But then it's going to be used, the user of that data he or she.
Yeah, but that might be someone in government where the data subjects, for example, I collect data about everybody who cycles in the Netherlands, yeah. And then you have this organization of cyclists you can involve. But if it's a bit more abstract than that, then mostly the user of the data is some government organization, and the people affected or the data subjects that are in that set, they find the use quite abstract, so it's quite hard to reach them.
Yeah.
So it's quite a hard group to involve and have as a stakeholder.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, a question for you. So you say you're collecting data. What is the purpose for which you are collecting the data? Do you already know?
It's an example.
No, but are you collecting data for a purpose, or are you just collecting data because it might be useful to somebody in the future?
Per definition, you're collecting data for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. For example, improving bicycle paths or improving commutes of people in the Netherlands.
On that. So the purpose limitation, of course, we get directly via GDPR for the collection of personal data. But GDPR would also allow you to then create synthetic data or pseudonymize the data, which I think should work very nicely for like bicycle route utilization, because you can actually move, you can blur, you can actually make that non-traceable. Now, I think the ethical question, and I think when I look at the Open Data Initiative, is actually an expectation from society and the different members in society, be it private citizens, be it NGOs, be it companies, to then actually make use of that collected location data. So I think when we are looking at location data and data ethics, there is a strict limitation, distinction between the processing of personal data, where you're clearly under purpose limitation. Mm-hmm. But then I would assume that there is likely, and we see that in the European Data Service Act, a very strong moral incentive to actually share that data and not keep that. Because if you would go out and collect the same data, you would again be causing harm on these people, because they would actually give up the data. So if you would have like an aggregated, good central data set that is of good quality and would that actually be reused by others for potentially other purposes, because they want to do other things based on that, then that should be completely okay. And then you really have this break between the personal data processing, where obviously, and you need to have a data protection impact assessment because of the location data. So you have, of course, naturally by law, the putting in the primary stakeholders. But then for the further use, I really wouldn't see that. So I'm interested in how you cut between the location data that's still personal, mm-hmm. and then the, I think, much bigger data ethics obligations that come with actually then potentially holding anonymized or aggregated location data.
Yeah, that's also a really interesting question. Actually, I think yesterday we were in a session where somebody said that, having, as soon as you put out data sets where, even if it's anonymized, if it's open and you can combine different data sets from different areas, can it ever be anonymous? Because you can always somehow then track and trace who is behind it. Yes, feel free.
You can't. So there is actually guidance on anonymization techniques that came by the Article 29 Working Party. And there it's there's approaches to that. There's existing approaches on how to determine whether there is only a very low remote likelihood of data to be re-identified. But if you have location data, like the use of bicycle path, mm-hmm. then you can actually aggregate that. You can actually say, I have that and that many people at a given point in time during the day on certain paths, and I just cut everybody that I have like a people count of below 5. And with this thing, you can really end up with non-personal data. Mm-hmm. You can also create synthetic data by basically training machine learning models on the actual observed personal location data, and then create data that would be statistically the same, but no longer personal. So there's approaches to that, I think. Yeah. Mm.
Thank you very much for your addition. Because of the time, we have to go on. Sorry for that. We can talk later on. So, Emily. Oh, we have the solidarity have we already had.
Oh, sorry. No, we skipped that one. The most important one. solidarity and engagement is what we've been coming back to throughout all the other principles as well. Who are the primary stakeholders? Who are the most important people who are actually being impacted by whatever you're doing? Are they treated equally? That's the point, the word solidarity is put in there to make sure that you're not just adding them because you feel like the law says it, or you know, then you look good. You really genuinely want to know what they, how they feel about things. You've had a proper conversation with them. Do you really understand them, and how do you give them a voice and actual influence? Something you want to add?
No, I think this is the most important, to involve the primary stakeholders, and that for how do you do that? And there are several ways to do it. And it's very, and what we see in our job, it mostly is never done. People say, okay, we first do it internally, we do it closed, and then we open, and then we're going to talk with the primary stakeholders. But the most important is also that the client already did his or her understanding together with his primary stakeholders for the question he is faced to. So that's a very important step, that it has to be much earlier in the process than it happens now. And we do that a lot, and there are several ways to do that. But we see it's the mainly in government, policymakers, they are very afraid to go outside to talk to people, to ring the bell on the houses, to go to farmers to talk, that kind of stuff. And then you have to do it. You have to go out and talk to people, go to their situation, to their location, to see how they live, how they work, what's in the surrounding, to have instead of getting them to you. And that's something we are try to achieve also within governmental organizations.
Do we have time for questions, or is it no?
One.
Music. Okay. No more questions, but if you have any questions, feel free to ask us at the end, or come to the 80s village. Now we have another way just to show you that you don't necessarily need to use frameworks and laws and all these the difficult things. You can also find ethics in more simple, fun things.
Yeah. Shall I? Yeah. We did a study on the head. You have all kind of frameworks. And we did a study and not hindered by law or science. That is another way how you can practice ethics gewoon on a daily basis, everywhere, anytime, where you are. And that is, of course, through 80s music. Because,
of course,
80s music, if you listen to it, there are mostly deep ethical messages in the music you can use in your project. But you can also do it when you are with your colleagues in the car, listen to the music, and then you can start the conversation about the messages in the music. So you can do that everywhere. And the most important in ethics is to start that conversation. So we're going to practice that together. So it's quite easy, and that's... Sorry, I have to put it on.
Oh, nobody can see it. That's good.
Yeah. So the first one, and this is what I want you to do, is to listen. And what is also what you do in the disco or in your car or at home. So that what I said is a very a low profile manner, and for low profile framework is to listen to music. And we do 80 music, but you can also listen to your music, because also there are very nice ethical messages. So the first one, I want you to listen, and after that you can talk to your neighbor from what kind of ethical message is this for me in my work or in the project I work for. This is the first one. All right, so discuss with your neighbor what deep ethical messages is in this song.
Terugkoppeling
en dan hier naar
voren
geloofd? Ja, dat doen we even zo. Terugkoppeling?
Ja, ik ga ze niks zeggen nu.
All right. It was a little short exercise. And did anyone find something in it? Who? Yeah? Okay, great. Anyone also? You had a good discussion about it? Yeah, great. Because it's also searching for a destination that's mine. What we see, the most clients don't search that good for a destination. For example, I don't know whether you had that also. Touching many hearts along the way. Well, most projects don't touch any heart, what I know. I'm hoping I'll never have to say it's just an illusion. Now, I hope that we acknowledge that what we do is an illusion and that we share that. So that's something which I get from this song, for example. Okay, so you can, this is the example for which you can do every day, every time, anywhere you want to do that.
Before you start a project, at the start of a meeting, whatever you like.
Also with colleagues, so let's do that. Low profile. Okay, and it's also very important to do things together. And I know in ethics, we are not alone. And we are with a community. We saw it, people standing up. We are not alone to achieve this mission, of our mission of doing things well, of making good data projects, and that it has really a value for society, for people. So I want to strengthen that feeling with you all, so let's sing together.
When you walk through a storm, held your head up high,
sing along,
and don't be afraid. At the end of the storm, there's a golden sky and a sweet silver song. Walk up to the rain, for your dreams be dark and low. Walk up.
Okay, thank you very much. See you next time. I hope you enjoyed a little bit.
Yeah,
Frank and Emily on ethics. Thank you. Give them a big hand again. Woo! And may you never walk alone.
Go ahead.